This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Robert Hodges, CEO of Altinity Limited, and we're going to be talking about ClickHouse.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me on the show. Well, first of all, I'm a geek, and I just want to warn the audience in case we go down any rabbit holes. You'll be along for the ride. I've been working on databases for over 35 years. I started in 1983. My last couple of gigs have included running a company that did clustering and replication for MySQL. We sold that company to VMware, and all of us went and lived there for a few years. And now I'm back in the startup world again, working on data warehouses.
You've acquired control of a database called ClickHouse, originally developed by Yandex, the big Russian cloud company. Why and what are you doing with it?
First of all, I want to say we haven't exactly acquired control of it, other than we are shepherding it in a direction that we think is good for users. The database is ClickHouse, and it was originally developed to do web analytics. The problem that the designers set out to solve was figuring out where people go on a website in their journey to buy something. So, for example, you may be using Amazon, you'll go click, 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 maybe put something in your basket, and then you will go away because you just decide, hey, I've got something more important to do. This is a source of tremendous sadness to people who run these websites. In 2011, Yandex, which is a Russian company that's kind of like the Russian equivalent of Google, they wanted to find a data warehouse that would help them do this analysis. And they couldn't find one that met their requirements, so they ended up writing one. And it was called ClickHouse because it analyzed clicks. It solved that problem. It was very primitive at first, but as it became popular within Yandex, they added additional features so that it could solve some other use cases. And then in 2016, they open sourced it.
So at what point did you then decide to get involved? And how does that change the open source relationship between the database, yourselves, and Yandex?
Great question. We got involved in 2016 when our CTO, Alexander Zaitsev, who lives in Moscow, heard about this database and decided to take the ad tech analytics that he was running at his company, take it away from Vertica and put it on ClickHouse. To make a long story short, it went so well that he decided, hey, there needs to be a company to support this, kind of along the lines of what Percona does or Pythian or other companies that make their living supporting open source databases. So he founded the company along with a couple of other people in 2017. The goal here was to work with the Yandex folks who were developing a very friendly community, have a very accessible set of committers, basically to work with them to build the community and then to be, if you will, the enterprise support for this ClickHouse database. So we don't own the database in any sense of the word. It's Apache licensed, but we do a number of things. First of all, we put features into it. We're currently the number two committer on it after Yandex. We offer 24/7 support. Developers, of course, don't really care about this, but when they build an application and it's using ClickHouse and it looks great, that's what their managers will buy. In order to get it deployed, they want a contract. We provide that. And then finally, we provide management software. So, for example, we wrote the first operator in Kubernetes that could deploy data warehouses in Kubernetes environments. We wrote that for ClickHouse, and we've published that in open source. It's going to join the rest of the ClickHouse software shortly. So that's basically what we do. Beyond that, as I say, we work with Yandex to build the community. It's in the interest of all of us who work on this project and have business around it to have the adoption as wide as possible. So we've worked hand in hand with the committers at Yandex, with other people in the company, communities and meetups around the world to promote the database, sponsor usage, help people understand what it can do and just build basically adoption as much as possible.
How does the community work with the two groups? Because normally when we see these scenarios of an open source database and then an enterprise version, the two tend to stem from the same root all the time. It becomes the commercial offering to sustain the underlying community. You, of course, are not owned by Yandex. You're wholly separate entities, but you're sharing a community. Does the community contribute into a joint core, or does Yandex hold the master core? How do you do this?
It's more the former. There's a joint core, and one of the things that's really great about ClickHouse is, although the core Yandex team still does by far the most commits, that's beginning to shift. We're hiring committers as fast as we can, and we've done a lot of work this year, particularly on features of interest to enterprise users, but we're getting a huge number of features from the outside as well. What we do is we try to work as closely as possible. So, for example, whenever we put something in for an enterprise customer, and they like things around security, around storage management, stuff like that, the first thing we do is we go have a chat with the committers at Yandex, and we all agree this looks like something that's good for the product, it belongs in the roadmap, or it doesn't. Then once we have that agreement, we go ahead and implement, and then it gets merged, sort of almost pre-approved for merge, as long as it's well implemented. So we have a very, very tight relationship with them, and I think that the community that has developed around this has a lot of similarities to the MySQL community in the sense that I think the MySQL community historically has been very accepting of changes from outside. And the attitude was, if you have a piece of code that you've written that you think will improve MySQL, as long as it meets coding standards and it seems to work, who are we to judge? Put it in. It's a sort of yes by default, as opposed to other communities which tend to be a lot more controlling. As a result of that, that sort of ethos has allowed us to work together really productively.
One of the challenges with all open source projects is how do you reward committers? Because once you get to an enterprise version, there is money in play. And as we've seen from some of the recent acquisitions, there is significantly large sums of money in play. 15, 20 years ago, people were excited just to be offered a free ticket to a conference or maybe a hotel night or something like that. As you start to build here between yourselves and Yandex, what do you put back to the community to keep those third-party committers engaged, but also to enable you to work with those and add those features into the product?
For now, the answer is close to everything goes back into the open source product or into ecosystem projects like Kubernetes operator described as well as APIs. We do a lot of work there as well. Our goal here is to have a core product that's truly community-owned and is also as capable as possible. It so happens that I think one of the things that's made this successful, in addition to some of the personalities involved, being fairly open. And for example, if you ask the lead committer, Alexei Milovidov, what is your goal for this software? He would say, I want ClickHouse to be the default column store in open source worldwide. Really simple. For business reasons, it happens we think that's a good goal. So does a good chunk of Yandex. And so does a good chunk of the user community. So far, everybody's aligned. And we've made some efforts to talk with folks at Yandex, our counterparts there, as well as pay attention to what the community is asking for to try and make sure that that is preserved for as long as possible. One of the things we're really fighting against is we do not want to see forks. We don't want to see the kind of things happen that happened in the MySQL community. I don't know if that is possible to avoid, but we're going to do our best. We have a truly great core product that really meets the needs of the community.
But how do you build hearts and minds? First of all, this is an incredibly noisy space at the moment around databases. Secondly, whilst as geeks we get what column store is, to most people, isn't a database a database a database? It's getting people to understand what you do differently and why you're different. And a third challenge that I see for you here, if you want to avoid forks, well, one of the downsides of getting a lot of eyeballs and a lot of attention is people will want to go their own way. They won't necessarily want to play the way you want. That, by its very nature, creates forks and disruption. How do you bring all that together, get that growth, but without that almost destructive disruption?
That's definitely a difficult problem. Let's just look at the forks problem. You get forks when people get frustrated for one reason or another. Right now, there isn't a particularly strong reason to fork the database because there's so much activity and features are being added so fast that most teams would not be able to change it as quickly as the community is already. There's sort of a momentum behind it. One of the ways that we can preserve that is to continue to ensure that we're adding features as quickly as possible and creating stable, usable releases. That just makes it harder for somebody to split off. They simply won't do such a good job. Beyond that, as you say, this is just a huge amount of money in this space. So eventually you do have contending economic interests. One of the things that I'm looking at as running the business is to try and forestall those. You generally have to think through these problems a little bit in advance. So, for example, the kind of thing that will generate a fork is changing licensing. This has been done. It's happening right now in a number of open source projects. It happens for reasons that are driven by the businesses. So, for example, you have VCs. They can see that, hey, Amazon is maybe going to build a service out of this. We own the IP. We own the copyrights. We're just going to change the license. Well, you can't do that with ClickHouse because it's actually community owned. Copyrights are shared. By setting something up, that outcome can't happen to have a relicense. It makes it somewhat less likely that we'll have that kind of economic split. Beyond that, why is it that people want to use this when they've got so many other choices? The simple answer is this database is like MySQL, only for big data. Sometimes the way I explain this database is imagine MySQL, wildly popular open source database, got married to Vertica, which was a pioneering column store, and they had a kid. that would be ClickHouse. On the MySQL side, it's open source. We all love open source, at least the early adopters do. And developers love it because it's easy to get to. It's portable, so it runs everywhere Linux does, and it's very easy to manage. So you can just set it up on a laptop, develop your application. If it works and you get sign-off from within the organization, you can push it out and have 10, 20, 30, 50 nodes. It's got a very good deployment model. So that's the MySQL heritage. On the Vertica side, we do most, if not all, of the things that Vertica does well. So, for example, we're MPP-enabled. We're able to spread queries across many nodes. We use vectorized query with really, really great compression and codecs for reducing uncompressed code size. We're able to split up the arrays, push them onto the CPU, use as much CPU power as available to us, use the IOs as efficiently as possible, very parsimonious in memory. These are reasons why people would want to use this database. There actually isn't anything quite like it in the market right now.
What's interesting about that is you say parsimonious in memory. One of the things about cloud is that it's technically, theoretically, unlimited resource. You need another 100 processors, just throw some processors at it. You need another 10 terabytes of RAM, just throw memory at it. And sadly, that's where a lot of people have got to. They're just buying resource, not necessarily knowing if they need resource. What are you doing to reduce your reliance on RAM? Because it seems almost counterintuitive to where we've been trying to drive high-performance analytic databases.
We're highly optimized to use all resources parsimoniously. I mentioned RAM because that's really the most striking one. And the reason that in a column store, basically all the data are arrays. So when you're processing it, you are selecting the arrays you want to look at, your selected chunks of the arrays, and then you go after them using as many hardware threads as you're allowed to use to go grab those pieces of the arrays, decompress them, push them onto the processor, do your sums or aggregates or whatever you want to do, and spit back the answer. There's been an enormous amount of engineering that's gone into the project to make that streaming process as efficient as possible. The core is written in C++. It's incredibly well engineered. And there's a saying that we have in our talks where we'll show a query and we'll say, hey, we'll show some query on a billion rows, or 1.3 billion rows is one of our favorite test data sets. We'll run a query and it'll take 4 seconds. And we'll say, that's pretty fast, but that's not ClickHouse fast. And then we'll show how we can successively optimize that down to sub-second or even thousands of seconds by applying features like codecs to reduce the amount of data we're processing, by using skip indexes, which allow us to identify data that we don't need to read, by building materialized views. That's one of the most powerful features in the ClickHouse, that it basically allows you to downsample and reduce your data volume by tens of thousands of times. You can use these, which will then allow you to get this enormous speed up in processing.
How much of this are you doing for the developer? Because anytime you're optimizing, there's a DBA generally involved, there's two or three data team involved, and you're looking at specific reports or specific groups of users, which tends to lead to duplication of data because you take this, you clone a chunk of this, you move it over there because you know that's what they're interested in. Then you reduce it down again for another group of people. You're talking here as if this is almost autonomous in the way it's doing it.
Actually, it's not. And in fact, one of the ways I talk about performance is everybody who's used Oracle knows that it has a cost-based optimizer. When I explain ClickHouse performance, I say, bad news, there's no cost-based optimizer. There's no magic that's going to make this thing perform great. The good news is there isn't a cost-based optimizer. You can figure out what this thing is doing. You don't need a DBA. And moreover, what's interesting about the column stores is they actually require far less tuning than a traditional row-oriented database. And I'll give you an example of the effect of the column organization and this optimized processing that we do. We have a customer that builds fraud detection systems. When they come to a bank or a credit card processor, they say, give me your data. Because what they need to do is explore the data that's available that can be consumed by the fraud processing system. And it's typically handed over in a bunch of CSV files, so just strings. And the first thing they do is they just load it into tables as strings. And then they begin to explore the data. They're not turning it into integers. They're not building a schema. They're adding indexes. They're making maybe one or two choices to, hey, say, order it by this column. But that's all they do. And yet, they can immediately begin to extract answers from the data. And then as they understand the shape of the data better, they build schema around it. You can, for example, we have a feature where you can add what are called materialized columns, where you can say, hey, this is a string. I'd now like to see it as an int. ClickHouse will take the existing data, allow you to select off it as if it was an int that you wanted. As more data is added, it will be automatically converted to it. This is just a model that is ideally suited for developers, that in fact, that situation you described with a developer surrounded by a host of priests, the way you have with Oracle, you don't have that model. And in fact, that's who we're going after, is to make those people as happy as possible.
It all sounds counterintuitive, or maybe 35 years of playing with databases make me think this sounds all counterintuitive. We educate people to think about an architecture, to think about the application, the usage at the end of the day. And even before the first piece of data arrives, we've got a schema. We've got a bunch of tables. We've got a bunch of indexes. We're starting to think about the type of queries. Do I need more indexes, less indexes? Do I need to split this down further? Am I going for a third normal form, a fourth, a fifth, a Boyce Codd? These are, maybe I am showing my age with that. These are all decisions that we all make when we start. Yet you're just throwing data into this and almost organically building what we would consider to be our database.
That's a development model. Now, let me be clear. There's some trade-offs here. One is, if you're building a production system, you just throw the data in and begin to deploy, you're going to regret it. And a big problem is that one of the secrets of all databases is the arrangement of the data is the key to performance. If all the data that you need to look at is in the same place in storage, your queries are going to return very quickly. If it is sprinkled across many parts of storage on many nodes, your queries are going to be slow. What happens with the first trade-off is that with ClickHouse, it is easier to build high-performance applications, but you need to test them. You need to make sure you are building them, because what will happen is ClickHouse will allow you to load enough data quickly that by the time you discover it's not working, you now have petabytes of data that you need to move into the new structure. The second thing is, there's some things ClickHouse simply doesn't do. It's not a transaction. It's not a row-oriented database. We use what are called sparse indexes, which typically only the primary key index only marks every 8,000th row by default. If you want to read a single row, you're actually going to read, well, by default, actually 8,192 rows. If you have a million people who are just asking for one row at once, ClickHouse is not the right database to use. This is a trade-off we've made explicitly in the design, which just turns out to be the right one for people doing analytic queries.
But how do you then overcome inertia of take-up? We were talking earlier about how you get eyeballs in an incredibly busy market space at the moment. Because if I've got to invest time and effort in understanding what the schema will be to prevent myself loading and unloading petabytes of data, if I've got to have people who understand the intricacies of this, that's a skilling problem. Projects that are fabulous and would solve massive problems have all failed in the past on skilling problems. So how do you build that skill set without impeding growth?
One of the things is, if you go back to the design decisions in this database, and you look at MySQL, for example, as an analog, we use SQL. So this is one of the things, for people who are coming to this, they can use familiar tools and use the SQL language which they already basically know. That makes the initial uptake fairly easy. In the long term, what we're going to need to do is, clearly we need to build tools. We have a simple architecture. We have the generality of SQL. These will be things that over time allow this database to win out over things that are not fully featured SQL, for example. But we also have to build the management tools, so that a developer can build something, but then they can just push it out into, deploy it into production and not have it constantly breaking or having to run back and keep an eye on it. They need that. We also need cloud services. The same thing that made Redshift phenomenally successful, ClickHouse needs this as well. It needs the ability that whatever cloud or environment that you're in, you need tools which allow you just to go to a screen, click a few buttons, and have the thing spin up. And in fact, that's exactly why I mentioned we've done work on Kubernetes. That's one of the reasons why we've actually put a lot of investment into that environment, because it gives us exactly that capability. And this is a path, we believe, that will allow people to use this database easily, spin it up, make experiments, throw it away, but also in the long run, deploy production systems.
Well, that drop and configure is what Database as a Service is trying to build at the moment. The challenge we have with most of the Database as a Service, if not all of the Database as a Service offerings out there, are that they're creating a lock-in scenario. They're getting people, oh yes, just 2-3 clicks, drop your data in. Ah, you want your data back. Oh, I'm really not sure we can 2-3 click your data back for you. So how do you overcome that?
We will always have an open source version of this. We are working on building cloud services, but they are ClickHouse. They're managed differently. They might do things under the covers differently. But like what Amazon has done for MySQL, which I think is a great analog, I can take a MySQL application that I develop on my desktop and I can pop it into Aurora, which has a completely different architecture underneath. But I'm still running MySQL. My app still works. I'm still using the same wire protocol. I still log in the same way. I still have the same roles. I still have the same SQL syntax. It's just the thing is way faster and way easier to manage. And more expensive, too. That's why this open source, coming back to the open source, that is why for us, having this open source base that always exists, meets people's needs, it is the way that we answer that question you just posed. It's like, you don't like it? Take it somewhere else.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how people adapt to that.
Oh, absolutely. But I think there's proof points for this. If you look at how people are using, as people grow larger and more sophisticated about Amazon Data Services, what's interesting is there is a trend that they will just go back to using basic compute, network, and storage, but they run the data services themselves. They use Cassandra, they run MySQL, and then if business conditions require it, they can move to another location. It's cheaper, but it's also more flexible for them.
Cheaper and more flexible, the promise of the cloud.
That's it, exactly.
Robert, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure.